This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and today I'm joined by Eric Bloom, author, trainer, and keynote speaker. Thanks for joining me again, Eric. Oh, I should say, you were the first person who's back on the show for a second time. Thank you.
Wow, thank you. I feel like a second-time host of Saturday Night Live.
Today, we're going to talk primarily about productivity for engineers and within IT organizations. But to start off, the word productivity is very easy to say, but what does it mean?
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that because this may sound funny coming from a guy who just wrote a book on productivity. Nobody cares about productivity. What they really care about is the time, money, and resources that productivity provides. If you look at what the one math formula I'll tell you is, what is productivity? It's output over input, which interestingly enough is the same calculation used for return on investment. But let's talk about what I mean by productivity. When people hear productivity, they think, oh, do it faster, do it cheaper, make people happy so that they'll work faster. What I'd like to do is I'd like to widen your horizons on it. So what are the inputs that go into productivity? It's mental energy by the engineers doing the work as well as the management people trying to approve which productivity enhancement project should be done. It's the amount of time that people are putting into it, the resources, the money, and like all IT projects or engineering projects, the risk associated with it. Now, what are the outputs? Yeah, it's time, money, and resources. Hopefully more than you actually put into to run the project in the first place. But look at it much wider than that. In other words, does it increase the quality of the software being developed or the services being provided? Does it reduce the risk? And by risk, I mean it could be business risk, it could be financial risk, it could be risk of the nightly production cycle running well or not well. So in fact, a project that makes the nightly production cycle more stable and less risky in itself should be thought of as a productivity enhancement. Next is faster throughput. If you have a project that previously would have taken one of your project managers and BAs, you know, business analysts and programmers, say 8 weeks, if you can now introduce that into production in 4 weeks, that is in fact a form of productivity. Others are enhancing employee culture or just, you know, corporate growth, making the value that IT provides to the business of greater value than it was before. So look at all of those things as productivity enhancements, not just, you know, better, cheaper.
A lot of companies, though, don't see it that way. They see IT as a cost center. They don't see that, you know, a faster release cycle actually increases their bottom line. Some companies are smart and they do, but a lot of companies just don't look at it that way.
I would agree completely. You know, is that to a certain extent, is that IT is held captive by the organization it serves. If senior management looks at IT as a strategic way to overcome the competition, then that's a whole different venue than IT in an organization where the comment is no overhead is good overhead and IT is an overhead function. So what I would say in that case, you know, IT needs to provide thought leadership. Because when you sort of getting it just into IT in general is, you know, there's no such thing as a technology project anymore. There are only business projects that require IT support. So for IT folks to really gain the mind share and the thought leadership of the businesses they serve, they have to certainly think technical. We're technologists by background. But what we need to do is we need to have a business hat on first, and then a technological implementation hat on second.
I have in the past railed against some of the ideas. There's a printing company in the Massachusetts area. I know some engineers who work there, and they view themselves primarily as a technology company that happens to do printing, as opposed to a printing company that happens to use technology. Now, I think they've gone a little bit too far with the idea that they're a technology company that happens to do printing, but I guess if you have buy-in of that nature, you're going to make your technology as good as you can, you're going to improve your processes as much, and it means that if that idea permeates the culture, you will support your engineers and it'll no longer be a cost center. But I think it can go too far sometimes.
You know, I think what are they looking to do is produce them, is their product, and how are they positioning themselves in the market? For example, if I think of a a printer that uses technology, you know, all right, are they just printing off things? That's their standard thing. But if they say they're a technology company that does printing, what does that mean when I look at it from a sort of a market branding perspective? Does that mean that they do print on demand? Does it mean that they can receive things in automated formats and change, you make media changes as required? So if they're using the idea of we're a technology company first that happens to print, are they really saying, hey, we have the most state-of-the-art capabilities to do our printing, and as a result, you should do business with us? So what I would say is that there's messaging and then there's internal. You know, the classic case of that is there's a book called The Box. And what it's about the big metal containers, those big square things that they use to ship cross-country. Across the ocean to deliver product. And the person who did it, forgive me, I can't think of the person who drove it, you know, who the book is about, that what they realized was they weren't in the sailing business, you know, in the moving the ships in maritime. What they were is they were in the cargo business, in the moving cargo from place to place, and they happened to do it by boat. So what I would say is, tying it back to the original printing business, is if they do printing, that's their product. The question is, how do they want to position that from a technological, a marketing, and a competitive advantage perspective?
Yeah, it is interesting. As I said, I kind of railed against that idea, but and I'll just make one final comment on this. There's an interview, another podcast coming up in a few weeks with the head of engineering from WeWork, the shared work facility. And his opinion was that they're not a real estate company. They're not just a real estate company. They're not just a property rental company. They're not just a construction company. They're not just an IT company. All of those things are key to what they do. And acting as though one of them isn't important is very detrimental. But I'll move on from this one. As an engineer, so we've defined productivity to a large degree, or what we think we mean by it. What can an engineer do to increase his own or her own productivity and that of the group they're in?
Okay, let me start with them personally. So for those on your podcast, they can get a good tip right up front. In fact, what this is not only one of the concepts in the book under the productivity amplifiers, it's also based on a TED talk, or TEDx talk to be exact, that I did a couple of weeks ago. And what it is it's called the four zones of professional productivity. I use this as a software developer, as a manager, when delegating, et cetera, and basically just in the book is moved it to print. What it is that if you've heard of the zone, you know, that's where we have high clarity, you're highly motivated, you're just basically at the top of your game when it comes to writing code. Some of the best code that I've written over the course of my life is when I was in the zone. You know where all the subroutines are, you have the algorithm designed in your head and you're trying to get it onto paper. The problem is, at least for me, you can't always be in the zone. So what I theorize is that people have four zones. And I've talked to this of, I could say dozens and dozens or hundreds of hundreds, I don't know, probably hundreds of people is probably more correct. But what happens is that people have four zones. They have, and you can remember this, by the way, because they spell the word task, T-A-S-K. The first is top of your game. That's where you're just in hyper productivity, where you're writing the best stuff that you're capable of writing. Then there are times when you're alert, but you're not creative. These are times to go, say, debugging code, maybe writing specific specifications going along with things, putting together a presentation on how something will be implemented, going through and calculating your project plan on your, how are you in your plan toward actual. So that's alert, but not creative. The third one, the S, is sluggish. Sluggish, you're okay, but that's a good time. You're not at the top of your game, so to speak. That's a good time to be able to do things like just return standard emails, write your status report, do your expense report that you've been putting off. Things you have to be paying attention, but it's more rote skill than really anything heavy. And then there's keeping awake. This is 45 minutes after a big pasta lunch, maybe even with a glass of wine. You know, you're at your office, you're trying to sort of gain a little bit of momentum. The first thing I'll tell you, if you're in keeping awake in the keeping awake zone, don't touch your computer. Believe me, this is the voice of experience, where I would go in, I try to copy something, I try to just make a small change, and not only wouldn't I do it well, I might actually delete something that might cause me 2 or 3 days work. Trust me, that's the voice of experience coming, you know, for what I've done.
I think it's like the don't program drunk, as a friend of mine once said.
Absolutely. So what I would say to you here is understanding these four zones, again, top of your game, alert but not creative, sluggish and keeping awake. When you look at your to-do list, is what you want to do is you want to pick a task to perform that's equal to your current level of energy. So for example, if you're really at the top, if you're at the top of your game, do this, you know, start working on this algorithm that is that there's really been an issue for you. Try to figure out how to define the architecture for an application or, you know, something of very high level. Because what happens is if you're in a really high zone, you know, mentally of energy at that time, will you do a really good job looking through your spam folder and deleting things that shouldn't be there? Sure. But what happens is you're squandering those moments of potential brilliance. If you go the other way and you're basically in keeping awake, we talked about what that could do to you and deleting stuff. But let's say that you say, you know what, I got to get this code done. I'm just going to try to grab a cup of coffee and see if I can do it. You're very low energy and you take on a high-end task. It'll take you twice as long. It'll be of half the quality. And if it's code or something technical you're putting together, it will probably be more buggy and probably have to be rewritten at a future time anyway. So effectively, you're wasting your time.
There are some things, though, that along with this, you have a certain amount of control over your own productivity. But, you know, you are, to some degree, at the under the control of your organization or your group. But one of the things I've noticed as well is that a culture of an organization or a department can have a massive impact on productivity. And there's a quote from Peter Drucker, and I think it's in your book, that culture eats strategy for breakfast. If you're in an organization where the culture isn't really lending itself towards productivity, is there anything you can do as an individual?
Well, I think that I'll talk about it as an individual and let me say as a tech lead or a department manager within that, you know, a cog in that very big wheel. As an individual, the thing that actually I just mentioned to you on the four zones is that is you can still very much do that as long as you have enough leeway and you set up your to-do list with the four items in those four different categories and just grab one off it based on how you feel. At a higher level, another one that you can do is what I like to call code reuse. So anyone who's been writing code for a long time is probably, and is on the line, is probably sitting back and saying, oh yeah, I do this one. Nobody writes things from scratch anymore. So what happens is any code that you write, let's say it's a great algorithm for something, is when you go to have to write something similar to it at another time, sit back and think, gee, now I wrote something like that once. How can I find it and reuse it? Or even better, build your own source code library where what you're doing is it's just a smittance of code that you really liked, how you connected that driver, the business spec that you had to follow for something else that you'll be doing again, that presentation that of project status or something, how did you do it? So you can find ways yourself. Beyond that, within your department, is what you can do is there are various techniques is if you're delegating to things to people within just your department, even if overall, you know, usually the word productivity becomes a little synonymous with innovation and efficiency. There are some companies that drive innovation, there are some that aren't. But if not, within your department, you can do some smart things regarding delegation even. For example, you always want to try to get two benefits from one action. So if I can say, let's say that, Brian, that you worked for me. I was trying to get you up to speed on a new task. You're newer to the department. Also, I only have one person who knows how to run the nightly production. And I have a task to delegate regarding the nightly production. If I delegate that task to you instead of the person who's the only one in the group that knows how to do it, think of all the benefits I get from that by just doing strategic delegation. First, the task will get done because you'll be working on it. Might it take you a little bit longer? You'll need a little bit more hand-holding to do it? Sure. But once you get it done, think of the investment in it. Then for me, as the leader of the group, I now have a little flexibility. I have two people who can perform that task instead of one. It reduces my risk because if the other person leaves or gets married and is on a boat in the middle of the ocean, is that I know that you'll be able to take over that task when they're out. In addition to that, what it does is I'm also training you and expanding your skill within the department, which will presumably, if that's something you want to learn about, will enhance your motivation because you see you're growing as a professional. So if remember, look at that wider view of what productivity is. So I would say that giving that task to you has much greater productivity from a departmental perspective than giving it to the other person who can probably do it more quickly.
Just to harp on culture a little bit more, if you have a strategy, let's say, I've seen things like company has no source control, no testing, bad code, a lot of engineers. You may come in as a head of engineering or a head of a team and you say, all right, you know, this month we're going to start moving our code to source control. Next month we're going to start doing unit testing. Next month we're going to start doing automated deployment. Next month and the following month, yada, yada. And so over a 6-month period, you might have a fantastic strategy on what to do. But then if we go back to the whole thing of culture eats strategy for breakfast, you're often going to hit massive opposition from people who don't want change. Now, if you have some authority and you can bring about, you have a certain degree of authority to enforce change, how can you as an individual change a culture to be more, productive?
Okay. Let me start with giving a certain insight and then from there break right into six cultural items that I think could be of value to you. And what it is if someone is stopping you from doing something in the workplace, they won't approve your project, they won't give you the resource you need, they won't do the testing that's required prior to moving into production, they won't give you the business specs. It's not that they're against you, it's that they're for themselves. So if you can understand why that person isn't helping you, don't say, oh, what do they have against me? 99% of the time, it has nothing to do with you. So if you can understand their wants and their needs in the business place and present it to them differently, that's one way that you can actually break through it. But just that was just sort of words of wit and wisdom, as they say. But let me break it right back now to the culture piece. You know, there's a number of things that if you're trying to improve culture, the first thing you need to do is assess what is the culture. You have to have what I like to call cultural awareness. Is everybody at each other's throats? Are people just not like each other? Every company has culture. Like individuals have personalities, organizations have cultures. So the first thing you need to do is to understand it. Is how are things done? You know, every company has a way of doing things. You know, an example, culture in driving, you know, driving down the street. I'm from Massachusetts. What that means to you is that if you don't like the way I drive, get off the sidewalk. But more specifically is we see a yellow light. What do? The law and the rules say slow down. What actually happens here, as well as most of the country, is assuming you think it's safe to do so, is you basically slam your foot in the gas and go through it before it turns red. All right, that is the difference between culture and the defined rules that are written. So you have to understand your company's culture so that, first of all, you'll know what to fix and or how to navigate within it. The next is you have to have an innovative mindset. What innovative mindset is rather than say how we've been doing it forever is how we'd continue doing it. The reason for that is because if you're not willing to be open and willing to think outside the box, then everything is going to continue how it is. Now, what I would say to you is that as part of that innovative mindset, a huge advantage to you is diversity. Now, when I say diversity, is that I'm thinking of it with a little d instead of a big D, at least for those in the U.S. When you hear the word diversity, you tend to think gender and ethnicity, which certainly those are two forms, but there's other things. Someone who's a baby boomer, someone who is fresh out of school knowing brand new technologies, someone who went up the engineering route, someone who is working in product marketing, someone who's worked as a business analyst, someone who is a project manager. All these people bring different diverse thoughts to a problem on how to correct it. So as a result of that, what might be outside the box thinking for me may be inside the box thinking for you. So it's that collaborative group that brings mindset if everyone comes together and says, hey, what's the best way to do it? It's sort of the classic definition of brainstorming. From there is management focus. You know, at the end of the day, the senior management in the company rules the roost. What's that takeoff on the golden rule? He who has the gold makes the rules. Well, see, if senior management doesn't want things to change and they want everything exactly how it's going to be, if you say, hey, I got a great idea or I have a great opinion, and your boss looks at you and says, when I want to know what your opinion is, I'll tell you what it is that probably you're not going to get a lot of support from the senior management group. How you know that is basically having cultural awareness. If you are in a position of senior management or senior within the group where you can affect the management focus, then concentrate on it. Ask people in your team the questions like, hey, how can we improve this? Not that it's going bad, but what can we do to make it better? What can we do to save time? What can we do to improve our quality? What can we do to improve efficiency? And then be willing to accept those their suggestions. Next is employee communication. Is that in, any type of productivity enhancement, innovation, anything along that line requires change. Well, how do you implement change in an organization? You have to tell people about it. You have to tell them why. You have to tell them what needs to be done. You have to get their buy-in to it. So employee communication, not only saying, hey, we want to innovate, but then also helping to make that innovation take form. The next is organization and self-learning. You know, as organizations grow and as they try to maybe they're trying to improve productivity through the implementation of a new process or through a new methodology. In the IT space, it may be, gee, you know what, we need better service model. So you're deciding to implement, a lighter or a full version of ITIL. Or you're moving from waterfall development methodology into agile. All of that takes you individually learning at the leadership level and at the individual contributor level on what are these new things. And then organizational learning is where the organization itself is learning how to do things that become part of the internal fabric of that organization. And the last one is, believe it or not, is conflict prevention and resolution. Why? Is because change causes conflict. Why? Because maybe something that my department had 10 people doing it, this new great productivity means I only need 4 people doing it. So as what happens to the other 6 people, and as the manager of a group of 10, I might feel like my wings are clipped if now I have a group of 4, so I might fight that. Also, there's differences of opinion, high risk versus low risk. Neither one is right. They're just difference of opinions of coming towards something. So, for example, a source of conflict could be that I think we should go with a fixed price contract to minimize risk, and you may want to go with a variable, you know, time and materials type contract the fixed price to minimize cost, and you may go to the variable time and materials type contract with the hope of minimizing the risk related to it. Is either one of us right or wrong? Well, if it's you, Brian, of course I'm right. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, there's no right or wrong in this. This is just different. So you have to understand as the management team and as individuals through, among other things, organizational learning, how to deal with that conflict so it doesn't hurt the company and the initiatives you're trying to put forward to enhance the productivity.
Yeah, these topics by themselves are, you could have a whole podcast. And I actually had a podcast with a gentleman out of Google on driving technical change and how to deal with people who are opposing you. It's very, very complicated and very, very tough.
It is, accidentally, absolutely. Any one of these, it could be a full podcast, it could be a book, many of these are their own books, or it could be a full day class. What I would say to you here is, you know, for those listening, is just be cognizant of these things, because it could give you ideas of where else to look to be able to expand your knowledge in these other areas.
Speaking of books, you have a new one out, Eric.
Oh, good segue. Thank you. Yeah, it's called Productivity-Driven Success. It's hot off the printers. The subtitle on it is Hidden Secrets of Organizational Efficiency. In going through it, what you'll find is that this is I'm a practitioner. I'm a CIO by background. I spent 25 plus years as an individual IT contributor and then up through the management ranks. So what happens, you'll find that there's many, many techniques like the ones we've been talking about here that you could find of value. It's available on Amazon. You can find it actually if you want to get to the book on my website, which is if I may say managermechanics.com. But my productivity stuff on this, and Brian, you can't laugh. My wife laughs when I tell her the other URL I have. Just go to MrProductivity.com and it will bring you directly to the part of our website that talks about the book and gives you some great productivity tips. You can download a chapter, things along that line.
I'll put the links, but one comment I'll make. I've read a good portion of your newest book, and I've also read a few of your other books. Is it fair to say that your other books were maybe a little more geared towards engineers' audience, whereas the newer book is a little geared towards more management audience?
Yes, well, let me say that I was very careful in everything that's in this book is 100% applicable to an IT audience. You know, that those are my homies. That's my background. However, with this book, what it's done is it's actually widened the applicability. It has widened applicability really to any area within an organization. So it's 100% applicable there. In fact, many of the materials that are in here were contained as original thought within my column in IT World.
So when I see a chapter titled Holistic Mindset, I
Yeah, let me talk on that one specifically.
sure.
Is, you know, as a technologist, you know, my 90%, you know, for most of my life, I heard the word holistic. What I'm thinking of is expensive foods, fancy elixirs, and yoga. What I mean by holistic here, it's funny you pick up on that, but what I mean by holistic here is looking at the bigger picture. So what it is I'll bring it into a for like a database administrator. Don't just look at the stored procs you're writing. Look at the overall data architecture of your company. So by holistic, I mean look at it the whole thing. Look at it as a bigger picture as opposed to a specific item within it. Because if you look at things from the larger picture, not only, quite frankly, does it position you for more senior management positions, because what a CIOs aren't looking at code and functions, they're looking at the greater overall arching function of IT. But what it will also do, it'll give you as an individual contributor, it'll give you a better understanding of how what you're doing fits in within everything else, so it'll actually help you develop better code, better specs, easier implementations, etc.
I think we'll call it a day there. Eric, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being on.
Thank you.
The opening music was A Return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Ghost Limb by Ben Carey from the album The Pack.